I wanna be the best in the game, invest in my name. Check no restraints, I'm obsessed with the pain. I ingest, I retain, assess and I change. Possessed by the thought I'll be free one day from society's restraints. Money, clout and fame, a disease, a plague. We all love to hate, have to play the game, have to make a name. All our insecurities are on display.
This is war with the enemy. Think that it was meant to be. Living in a time where...
Hello and welcome, listeners, to another episode of Tactical Awareness. It is Season 1, Episode 23. We are creeping up on 24 episodes now. And we are here for the Spring Offensive recap. Spring Offensive was last weekend, and we are lucky enough to be joined by the winner of the tournament overall. We had 30 players and three rounds, and White Company. John 2's White Company took it. So he's going to join us, walk us through this emerging pattern of N2A armies doing well in big tournaments, talk about the freedom I gave Owen and Dan. So let's catch up and see how it's going.
I let you guys have your freedom. It was my favorite comment about your freedom last week was, we need a passport for all the different journeys that this conversation took. You guys went everywhere. It was tremendous.
It was great. I tried. I was like, wait, we're talking about something cohesive for a while. I need to derail this.
You're just the agent of chaos and all this? Sweet.
Who is this John and why is he here?
Well, John's here. Hey. Because John, say hi, John.
Hey, how's it going?
You're supposed to say hi, John. That's your that's the standard response.
Oh no.
It's okay, you fucked it up already. It's already gone off the rails. Our cold open of random bullshit. John, he's here to talk about the Tactical Awareness Spring Offensive, which just went off last weekend. And which I was busy getting ready for last week, which is why I handed the reins over to Owen and Dan for their, let's just say, their fantastic adventure that they took. And now we're back on mission. Dad's home. And we're gonna talk about how it went. And John's list, because John came first, and he is kind of showing an emerging pattern right now of taking N2A lists and winning big tournaments. And I think that's really interesting. So thanks for coming on, man, and talking about White Company, because this is an interesting N2A list. It blends some interesting faction models from like Winter Four and is it Invincible Army or is it
White Banner?
White Banner. That's right. Yeah. And you get some pretty cool results. There's a lot of people taking that particular N2 army to tournaments. Actually, I think one of the guys from Goonhammer took it to Adepticon and wrote a big article about it. And I've seen it a couple other places too. So it's pretty popular. So I'm excited to have you walk us through it, because we haven't done the N2 armies yet, but we've done a little bit of discussion about Yuching when we went over like Dan ordering a Yuching army, and Owen and I both played Pano, so we both got opinions on that stuff. Although I've played Winter Four. I don't think Owen's really played with much of the Winter Four stuff, have you?
I haven't played anything in Pano.
Well, you played Knights,
yeah,
forever. And then you played Pano.
Are they really a representation of the rest of the Pano faction?
I mean, you also played Tags at one point, which was just
playing Tags in Pano. I didn't do that. I've only talked about it.
I'm pretty sure we played a couple games.
The double Squalo Yotam?
I've never Yotam actually played Squalo.
Oh, that's a spicy list.
Yeah, Yotam double Squalo. We've theorized it. I have Yotam double Squalo, and Owen's wanted me to play it for some time.
Because I only have a Yotam and a Squalo. And like, I'll proxy a Seraph as a Squalo, because like, they're pretty close, but...
Whereas I actually have two painted Squalos and a painted Yotam.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, you should do it.
Why haven't you done this, Ash?
Just do it.
Yeah. So before we get too far in, actually, we usually go through and just catch up whatever else has been doing for the week, hobby-wise. And we'll start with you, John, because you just said you came back from doing some hobby at your local shop at Solon's Shop in Windsor.
So I've been cleaning up the rest of my White Company that I didn't bring to the event. So it's my Guija, couple like skirmishers like Liang Kai and Shona Krano that didn't make my list, unfortunately.
We're big Shona fans here, because Dan and I both play O12.
I hate her so much.
The Shona Varangian, so the Shona Varangian,
always fails me.
It's because you don't put the Varangian into melee as well, so you don't get the extra bonus dice.
Yeah,
that is my, you gotta get that bonus dice, man. Yeah, I think she's great.
I think she's fantastic. I just hate her because she's been fantastic for me.
Disagree.
mine always runs into shock ammo for some reason and always dies.
Gets obliterated. I do like Liang Kai. Liang Kai is also fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a very expensive Shaolin, but he's kind of like Saito Togan, where you're like, if you work,
work real well. But if you don't work, you don't work at all. That's sweet. So like just getting them painted and finished up?
Yeah, just finished up my other stuff that didn't make the list. And because I basically started the army on like the Monday. And I put like 20.
You pulled an
Owen. Yeah, I put like 27 hours in the week and I was like, okay, they're good enough. Let's go.
The joy of contrast paints and airbrushes and washes. Well done. No, your army looked great though.
Thank you.
And it was cool to see the army actually on the table. A lot of people were tempted just to cobble to other collections too. I do like to see these N2 armies actually like cohesive, you know, like where it's not just like a bunch of yellow guys and a bunch of blue guys mashed together in a list.
Yes.
And it's actually like a cohesive force.
Originally, that's what they were. I just grabbed whatever I had painted up for my Kaldstrom pack.
Because Kaldstrom's like a starter set for it, basically.
Yeah. So I had them painted differently and I'm like, okay, I had to strip these off and redo them.
Wow. That's a fine Infinity tradition. Owen's Militarizer Army, I think, has been painted like 4 times.
Oh my God.
It's painted over and over again. There was the famous point at which they were all painted like Iron Man. That was my favorite when they were all red and gold and he hated it. He lasted exactly one game. He painted, he was super proud of it. Then he brought it in and played it. Then he was like, no. Then the next day he came back and he repainted them again. All right. What about you, Owen? What have you been doing?
Fuck that army.
Yeah, fuck that army.
Well, I went down to Sentry Box again. They had a box full of random miniatures in Ziploc baggies at $5 per miniature.
That's the best.
And I just found a bunch of random stuff. There's stuff in there. I don't know what it is.
Really? Oh, put some pictures in the chat, man. Let's take a look.
Yeah, I'm not going out to my car. But...
Oh, it's in your car right now? Okay. Never mind.
If you ever wonder where Owen's miniatures are, they're just in his
car. Mostly. Yeah. There was a point at which Owen's old car... Was it the, what was it? Was it like the, oh shit, the one before the one you have now? The Camry's the one you have now. What was the one before that? It was like a Sunfire.
No, I had an Alero.
Alero? That's what your granddad's Alero.
I bought that for a solid $1,500.
It lasted you a while.
It lasted like 8 years. It was a 2002 Oldsmobile Alero, the two-door. Oh, and fuck. I would just fill the trunk with like every game system that I played. And then on like a random Saturday, it'd be like, oh, there's a War Machine event. Go there.
I wonder what's in my trunk.
Pull out a box in my trunk and then build a list with whatever I had with me at the time.
I remember when Owen and I first met, I looked in his car and I was like, if there was a child services for miniatures, I'd be calling them right now because this is a fucking horror.
That's because
there's
fucking models in the ashtray.
There was models in the ashtray. There's models in the glove box. There's models in like the side pockets of the seats. It was bonkers. It looked like someone was like the miniatures were just like squatting in there. Like the fucking Fraggle Rock had been evacuated.
And his house isn't much better. I like why he's like, look at all this hack and slam I have. And he just picks up this like box that looks like a garage sale of
he can't be tamed. He can't be tamed. So what did you find?
I thought I was bad.
What did you find?
I don't know. I mean, the biggest part was a lot of the Svarlima stuff, like Svarlima Winter Force models.
Oh, cool.
Scarface, just the dude.
Oh, like, yeah, the pilot.
Yeah, and then like a bunch of other random characters, a bunch of Aelith characters. A bunch of Hawk Islam guys who are in box sets, so I guess could pull individuals out of it.
That's nice, like the SWC guys. Yeah, like just random SWC guys.
Yeah, so just a bunch of random stuff. I don't know. I haven't even really gone through it too much because it was more of like, hey, my opponent hasn't shown up, so I'm going to just look at what they got. And then I played my Dashat list.
Ooh, cool.
Which is hilarious.
So for those listening, what was the Dashat list? What was the big core in there? Because you shared it with our group chat, but I don't think anybody's actually seen it.
It is a Magariba Guard duoed with a Rafik. Two motorized bounty hunters duoed together.
Yeah.
Four bounty hunters and a Ghulam in a 5-man core link. McMurro. And then a group of Valyria, two Diggers, and the Fiddler. I didn't know Fiddler was a monkey.
She's got a tail. Yeah, she's got a tail.
No. Have you seen the Eris Day of Fiddler? She's an actual
It's actually a monkey. Yeah, she's got some Goku, like, when the moon comes out bullshit going on. Yeah, there's a lot of that. That's your, like, Cowboy Bebop list. Like, it's just all mercenaries and, like, a couple random Fusiliers.
It's 8 booty rolls.
It's a lot of fucking bounty hunters, yeah. It's what, 6 foot and 2 motorized?
four on foot, two motorized, and then two diggers.
Oh, two, and the two characters too. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
There's Valerie, and then so the Valyria hunter, and yeah. Fiddler, mm-hmm. and then McMurrow, who's sort of a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I'm sure he's killed people for money before and brought back their bodies.
Pulled five sets of grenades. didn't do much with those. And diggers are just really good forever. Like if you can bring linkable diggers on their own, they have problems because of impetuous. Linked diggers are dumb. Like the one of them pulled 8-4, and so he's like,
bound motorcycle legs.
My people need me, and then he drove away and stayed just barely within 8, so that he had a burst 3 chain rifle, or burst 2 grenades, and just went up onto a rooftop and was like, "I've come to kill you," and he did.
Who'd you play against? Or what?
I was playing against. What was I playing against? He had. It wasn't Nomads because I was playing Tyler, who usually beats me or at least ties.
Starco, maybe like a mixed list.
He had. No, that's what it was. He was playing QK.
Oh yeah, these random Aguasil and random Mopra got in there.
Yeah, and then he had the Azrael annihilate all my bounty, my motorcycle bounty hunters on the first turn.
He would bully the shit out of those guys for sure.
Plus 4 armor while in cover with mimetism means absolutely nothing against AP HMG with +1 damage and continuous damage in a link. Ooh. Yeah, that's the Azrael is a people deleter. But then I rolled him into the ground and like just crit. Mag Reba Guard shot the Azrael. 3 out of 4 dicer crits. And then he's like, we're not done yet. And then like this went on for like the rest of the game on the one side of the board where I just like annihilated. Like I go to shoot his remote and 2 out of 4 dicer crits. And then like just all over the place.
Those two bounty hunters on motorcycles were well liked by the rest of the army. And
they didn't do anything. They just died.
Well, that's what I mean. Like the rest of the army liked those guys and then they got payback.
Yeah.
But it's how Ethereal dies.
Yeah, or
raged out
beast hunter versus digger in close combat. It's dumber than you think it would be. Beast hunter wins or beast hunter loses.
I mean, they're both NWB, so it's just dice at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. The beast hunter has a DA weapon and bonus damage and above 21, whereas the digger has an AP weapon, but he's got extra burst.
So that's right, like, burst 2. I forgot about that. Just randomly burst 2, and that's the big advantage.
But the thing was, the real big advantage is that Digger's got 2 wounds.
Yeah, he's got a backup.
Yeah, so you hit him with the DA, he passes one of those saves. You hit him with the double attack AP, Beast Hunter goes down.
Mm-hmm. That was an interesting run with. I like that you can still do Rafiq Maggie in that list too, which is just a powerhouse combo.
That combo is real good. Really good. Like I had to use the mine trick to clean out a
corner shooting mines. Yeah,
who was it? MSV2 sniper Jambazan. I also then just crit into the ground. Didn't need to bother with the mines, but
it's better to be sure. If it's one order to be sure, you know what I mean. Dodge or shoot, your choice.
Yep, you're gonna die either way. But anyway, yeah, that was my game. Just played the one.
Just making friends wherever you go. Good times. Making friends and buying up all the loose miniatures. What about you, Dan?
Well, I got a response back. It's been 6 weeks now since I put my Yuzhang order in.
I think the French took your money, man. I think the French just took your money. They said they were giving you a store credit.
He's like, I don't know what's happening personally. I got to call them today and I'll find out. And that's the last I heard. So that was this morning, though. So we'll see.
You sent your message to a P.O. box, didn't you? You got fucking full on. You just got grifted by some kids.
No, this is my gambling. This is how I get my kicks.
You spent hundreds of dollars.
I just buy and sell miniatures online.
You sent all your War Machine shit to get back randomly, and now you're getting nothing back. They're gonna send you a box full of hair. Nothing.
$30 worth of lead.
That's true, yeah. And they turn it into bullets or something. It's just going to be like a bullet manufacturing company you sent to.
And they sent him back nothing. But what they did do is cleaned out his basement.
It's true.
Yes, I have so much space now.
I have promises.
But no, what I've been doing is building random miniatures. Mainly a Salamandra, a cutter, And I'm gluing together a bull track right now because I'm obsessed with tags.
The bull track's a great miniature. I like his like backwards legs.
Dude, what I love most about him is the little dude on the little platform hanging out.
Little baby carrier.
He's just hanging out. I was like, what the hell is this? I'm like, oh my god, it's
That's
a dude.
That's
a
pilot, man.
It might be my favorite tag right now, just looking at it.
He's brave.
Comical.
He's very brave.
It's
the
like,
way
how
he's
is
just,
this going to survive?
He's
I don't
just
even
kangaroo
know the rules
pouched.
Thing,
yeah,
but
he's
I just
just kangaroo
want to put
pouched
on
there.
Played he's... War Room this weekend. It was great.
Was that?
Just to derail your conversation.
Yeah.
We played War Room. It was great.
Oh, yes. Also, we played.
Because I think we talked about that on the last podcast.
The biggest of all World War II board games.
Oh. I thought you were making a War Machine reference for a second. I was
people still play
that game? What the fuck are you talking about?
No, it was easier for me to get six people together to play 7 hours of a World War II board game than it is to find a single person to play War Machine with.
Fucking shots fired.
So,
Jesus.
So Axis and Allies is Risk on Crack, and War Room is Axis and Allies on Crack.
Are you like tracking the fuel of the tanks and stuff like that? Is it just like Bananas Complex, one of those old Avon Hill games?
It's kind of like you have oil and you can bid with your oil, but then you also have to, you only get 9 orders, and like you look at the world map and you have like different armies that are like thing, and you're only allowed to like 9 movements around the world as your faction, and you got to lock in all your movements and how much you bid for oil for turn order at the same time everyone else is, and then you all reveal and like armies clash and different things.
It's like a double, it's a double blind. Yeah, like a double blind like order system thing.
Yeah. And then, yeah, the combat system is pretty decent. And then as you lose guys and lose territory, you start taking stress and you can go into economic collapse and bad things can happen. But it's just like, yeah, it's just really fun.
So who won World War II?
We called it a draw, but the Axis were leaning ahead.
Oh, jeez. Went straight man in the high tower.
Yeah, that American fleet got away at first, but that American fleet did not stay away.
Oh man,
I went play the Japanese, I played Russia, and
Dan was
allies,
in Moscow completely surrounded.
My allies did not come quick enough. The Italians and the Germans just were like, all of our armies are gonna walk towards Russia, and I'm like, I can't produce fast enough, I'm dying.
They're eating bratwurst in Washington DC.
God, they were eating sushi in Washington, D.C.
She's really, oh my God.
You had to
invade. Some real different history there for a second.
He was about to invade Alaska with a massive Japanese force.
Wow. Well,
anyways, it's a really fun game.
You
felt otherwise...
picked it. Good job. Well, for me, I recovered from Spring Offensive. I started all the organizational task listing for Summer Siege, which will be the next one we have to do. We got another table to build, so we're going to 12 tables, and then that'll take us to our 40-person cap, I think, for the next one. We will easily hit that cap. We're already half sold for this upcoming event, so it's pretty exciting. It was a great weekend. I got a ton of help from Chase and Rob and Jordan and Greg and a bunch of the other folks that showed up early and helped me set up, which was much appreciated because there's lots to do. The venue was great again, great hosts. And everybody was really personable and great. There was no real arguments. There was a few questions and like Q&A things. We had most of the people show up from Winter War, and then we had a ton of new faces for Spring Offensive, which was great too. So a lot of people couldn't make the date change to roll it over into the next date, but luckily 30 could. So we managed to get the event to grow by about 50% from the first one, which is fantastic. And I got to go hit my task list now for the one in August. So August 20th is going to be the next one. It's already up on ITS on the community site. There's a document for it. We're going to go to 3 different missions. We're going to start with quadrant control. He said question mark, I think, because I don't want to set up objectives in round one. And then 2 more sort of varied missions. I think we end with unmasking, which will be an interesting one to have as our final. No, it's unmasking is the second one. And then the third one was another sort of like variety mission. About to kind of have that a bit more complex, because that'll be our season ender. Because October, the new ITS pack should be out. And hopefully we'll know in August too. What's that?
You're just making this up as you go along.
No, I'm not.
Sounds
definitely
like
not.
That.
And October 10th of last year is when the last ITS dropped. So we know it's in October. So we'll schedule the first new ITS season event for the second or first or second week of November.
We're going to play a scenario.
It's in the tournament pack. I wrote it all. I just can't remember what the fuck it is. Hang on. I'm going to go look at it
right now. So my goal is to have my Yuzhing by the time the next ITS season starts.
Sweet. And you can do it for your next ITS army. That's a great idea. Perfect. I mean, it might even be here. Or you'll have driven to Quebec to try and find out what actually happened.
I'm too lazy.
That's what they're counting on.
All I did was get rid of War Machine. It's not worth that much.
Jesus, man. This is like you bought a timeshare in Quebec. This is where this is heading.
Timeshares are the thing, man. They're the best.
Some timeshare bullshit right here. Here, I'm looking at it right now. The Summer Siege is... it is Squadron Control, Unmasking, and Supplies. Because that makes sense, because Supplies has the same objective set up as Unmasking. So that's about it for the third round. And we already have about 20 people subscribed and paid.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's very nice. That's going to be a big event.
I feel like this is the post-COVID people are coming out and enjoying games again.
So I said that to Dave. We're sitting there. So Dave Tierney, who's Captain Spud of Captain Spud's Hacking Helper, helped me run the event. He's another Warcorn. He and I were running, like, trying to get an ITS like league system thing going back in like 2017, 2018, and we couldn't get over 20 players. We spent like 3 years trying to get over 20 players. We couldn't do it. We bribed them. We went to big events. We went to other halls. We went to the TGX every year. And we just couldn't get big events going. People didn't want to cross the city and stuff like that. We don't know what's changed. But I looked over and I was like, could you imagine like 3 years ago that this would happen? And he's like, I can't believe this is happening either. Like, we spent so long trying to get people to play. I think it's a mix of things. I think we're at peak 40K right now, which means people are looking at other games.
Tail end of N3?
No, it was like mid N3 when we were doing it. N4 was, I mean, N4 came out 2020, and 2018 we kind of gave up. Like 2019, we didn't run any events. Wow. So it was probably like the last 3 years of N3. We were really pushing it, but actually it was probably mid N3. Because I think, when did we start doing it? Because you and I played N2 right at the end and then started playing N3 together. And then I started running tournaments probably like a year and a half into that. So it was probably most of N3 we were doing it.
Hey, you're just making up dates too.
This is what I mean. He's mad I'm back. He's like a sulky teenager right now where I came home and I busted him for having spent all the money I left for pizza on drugs.
Yeah, after you incoherently talk for 15 minutes about something happening somewhere at some time. Guys, there was an event. It happened in somewhere between 2017 and 2020.
I like how he just detailed described a game none of us saw, but I have like physical evidence of a tournament that I'm talking about, and he denies that it happened. He's gonna call it rambling. I fucking do. Yeah. So speaking of which, that's what John's here for. He isn't here to listen to our random nonsense for the entire night. So let's kick off and actually talk about your experience at the event. But let's lead in with talking about White Banner, because they're a pretty interesting army. And I'd be interested in hearing, like, why did you pick them? What was your reasoning for this being the list you wanted to take to a big ITS?
Okay, yeah. I guess I'll start off with a why White Company.
White Company, sorry, I said White Banner, didn't I? I'm gonna do that all night, by the way.
I did that constantly when I was starting. Yeah, so I had the models from Kaldstrom for quite a while. So I started my Infinity journey at the start of N4. So I had the Kaldstrom box. At that time, Solon's store was a local new hobby store opened up, and I was the local demo guy. So I had purchased the Kaldstrom box, and that was my first jump into Infinity.
You're so lucky. That's such a great box to have started with, because that is the best box. I mean, they made great boxes up until that point, but they really figured out starter sets at that point. That is a really solid starter set.
Yeah, I purchased that box to help people like demo the game, learn the game. just to kind of grow the community. And then I immediately switched to Haq Islam, which to me is probably the superior army. But we're not here to talk about Haq Islam. So
he's trying to get on to like you. I get it.
The game is very, very different playing one white company. So I wanted to challenge myself for this event and play something I've never played before. So my experience is mostly with Haq Islam, Rama Task Force, and White Banner from Yujing. So I really much prefer the control-y type gameplay. I feel comfortable going second in a game that really prefers to go first. So
you're playing armies too that had a lot of those armies in particular have a lot of midfielders and like disruption pieces that give you some insulation against going first or second, so you don't care about the role so much.
Yeah. So picking up White Company was a completely new world for me. Having so many pano pieces, like being like the Karhu, having access to orcs, like those five links, it was a very different play style for me, and it was very uncomfortable when I first started. So believe it or not, my first, I don't know, 10 games, 10 practice games, just I got annihilated. I don't think I won a single practice game. So yeah, I just wanted to challenge myself and landed on White Company.
There are some standout pieces in White Company, just looking at the list overall, and I did see a few of them in your list. Obviously, you have access to Varangians and Pano models, and Lienke, and those three things together means that you have smoke. So, right out of the gate, having access to smoke and having access to lots of visor options, because you've got Nice, you've got Karhu, you've got, oh geez, the Guilangs in there. I think it's MSV1. Mm-hmm. You got a whole lot of visor options for smoke and some real durable high BS hitting pieces, which is pretty attractive as far as like a core model. And then you have some real standouts even from those factions. Like the Karhu is like a premier midpoint value gunfighting piece. That plus one burst Fuhrbach is...
Yeah,
no joke. Burst four Fuhrbach in a Harris with MSV, and I think they have Mimetism too, don't they?
Yeah, Mimetism three.
Yeah, that's a real bad boy at putting down just about anything in the game.
And climbing plus.
Yeah.
Plunging fire too. Never mind.
He's like Predator. He's just skittering up walls, shooting stuff down left and right. He's an absolute animal.
And then his basic Karhu too. If you need a backup piece, you can have a Blitzen. AP Mines and Emirat if you want. They have such a weird, weird profile. And you can put in Kaplans if you want to make them cheaper and take a core. There's a lot of stuff you can do with that list, which is neat. You have access to the Beast Hunter, obviously, which is a fantastic, like, that's one of your insulation pieces right there, too, if you want them to be. Kind of mimics what you're talking about there with Rama and Haq Islam and those cheaper Yuching pieces.
You can link the Beast Hunter.
Oh, you sure can.
Oh, yes. So
nice. You sure can.
The 9-point Beast Hunter is very, very value town.
Yeah. That Karhu loves that plus one burst. He's like, hey, you're weird and you dress in furs, but you're coming with me, buddy. You got all the same skills as me. You got that climbing plus to get everything you want. Or sorry, a super jump, not climbing plus, never mind. Same sort of idea. So then you were going to put this list together, and you put two lists together. You put a core one together for like two of the three scenarios, and then you had an off list. So why don't you walk us through the two lists, and then we'll talk about your gameplay.
Yeah, so I have the... let's take a look at the one I played the most. That would be the Spring Offensive, maybe. I had originally scribbled up a list that had...
We'll put these in the chat.
The Guija in there. Just because during my practice rounds, I've noticed for Capture and Protect, it was really hard for me to send a model so deep. And get those early points, but I kind of got cold feet, like a Thursday right before, so I submitted the Spring Offensive maybe list, just because I felt more comfortable with the Tiger Soldier having super jump in two of the scenarios, and let's see here, I also had. The Haidao five-man team.
Yes, that Haidao MSV2 is another great gunfighting piece.
Yeah, I just felt really comfortable just with between the Carhu, Harris, the Hideout, five man team, and the Tiger Soldier. Just yeah,
Oh, scalpeling
this.
stuff out. I need a Taowoo there for counterintelligence if you're gonna go second.
Yeah, the list started initially as a missile bot list, but it went through so many different versions that it looks a lot different than it was before. I scraped a lot of the hacking power out of it,
Do you have
just
a
because
hacker? It doesn't look like, because you're not really hacking susceptible except for like a missile attack.
yeah, I just
There's
have Valeria there.
yeah.
Yeah, so Valeria is there for the plus one burst total control. Because again, going back to my practice games, I noticed a lot of my local opponents, when I asked them to scrape up a list for capture and protect, they all brought tags.
Yeah,
And
I mean
so
that
in
makes sense. It's
and,
a football game, right? You're trying to charge forward and grab that beacon.
yeah, and so in all three games during the event, everybody had tags. So it was like it's mostly there to be like a soft arrow to like to kind of spook people.
And if you get to go first, you can throw out pitchers and stuff too.
Yeah. So really,
So
when
group one, just to walk through it, group one for those of you listening is a Harris of MSV2, Hidao, paramedic, and you're like, I assume, crouching fusilier somewhere on a rooftop, lieutenant. And
Oh,
then,
that's a five man, actually.
oh, is it because of Valerie and Talwood in it
I've
too?
yep.
That's right. I forgot they're also linkable. So that's a full core link, but they don't get composition bonus. They just get the core plus one. And then you've got a Harris with a Kaplan doctor to try and fix him up if he needs to be, the Carhu Fearbach and the Beast Hunter. And that's your secondary there. And then you got a Guilang Mine Layer as like your midfield sort of like repeater if you want to go hunt that tag. I'm gonna try and total control it or just putting out mines and stuff too. Which has a turn one repeater. Our turn zero repeater even, because it's a
Yes.
mine layer with deployable repeater, which is a very cool Guilang profile. And then
Yeah.
you've got your Corsair in group two if he shows up. Beast Hunter with surprise attack, so you have like the infiltrating Beast Hunter. You've got a Peacemaker. Interesting choice for the Peacemaker over the whatchamacallit, the MSV one or the Mimetism one.
Bullet here.
Yeah, the bolts here.
The bullet tier, I think, was just too expensive, and
Check one the same
I
price, I
think
think. You don't get the Armbot.
it's yeah, it's 20. I think it's 26 points now, and the armbot is easier. Sorry, the oxbot is easier to
Oxbot, sorry.
trade with, which is really nice. It's easy to like sweep mines that the Carhu fears. Yeah, it was just I felt like the Peacemaker was just easier to corner guard with.
I've started using the Peacemaker more
Yeah.
in my whatchamacallit, my NCA list, and I see the point of it now, especially now that they've upped the points of the bullets here. No, the heavy shotgun bullets here is 21 points. You just don't get the Oxbot to trade. The Spitfire one's 26 now.
The Tiger Soldier is actually a comfort piece. I really liked having super jump on the Kharij and Hakazon. So in two of the missions they have super jump because of low gravity zone, right?
Right. He's zero G.
Yeah, so if your opponent is ever so slightly relaxed, if you can find one opening to either parachutist or combat jump if you really feel bold, then he can really just punish the board all on his own, right?
He's a
Get
min
behind
minus
some
three.
arcs.
Yeah, BS
Yeah.
13, min minus three. People don't think about Tiger Soldiers very much, but they are a really good gunfighter for being able to
Yeah.
parachutist and combat jump.
And the Brangians are there to obviously support the Hideout and get in the way of pieces that want to hunt the fire team.
Right. You want to trade off and clear ways for people to advance and stuff too. And then you got a Fugazi in there for a cheap order, it looks like. Maybe give Valerie some hacking presents. Sweet. So this is the one you used in which of the scenarios?
I played this list in the first and second game, the first and second rounds.
So you played it in Firefight and you played it in Acquisition.
That's right.
Right. Sweet. So let's talk about those games.
Yeah, okay. So in the first game, let's see here, I played against Dash Hunt Company. I think I played against Greg.
Yes.
Zeus, is that his?
Yep.
Super name.
Yeah, Zeus. Yeah, I said his name wrong every single round.
Super nice guy.
Really nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah, super duper nice guy. I was a little bit nervous because it's my first like tournament outside of Windsor. So playing against Greg, like, it just calmed my nerves a lot.
I bet. Yeah, warmed you up. He's a super nice guy. Yeah. He and I played a game at the. He was there when Owen and I ran a little mini ITS 2 weeks earlier. The makeup ITS. A really nice guy.
Yeah, he's incredible. So rolling up to that board, that's the board with the, I think it's a helipad or the catwalk.
The Apache Warsenal terrain. Yeah.
Yes. So on that map, it was pretty open. What I noticed when I rolled up to it, I wasn't really sure about Dash and Company. I've never come across them before. I just knew something about motorbikes. So I was really hoping I didn't lose first turn, and lo and behold, he rolls up with Maggie and Bounty Hunter and two Coon Riders.
Yeah, that sounds like Greg. He likes the big plays.
It might have been two Bounty Hunters and two Coon Riders, but anyways.
I can pull up his list, so give me 2 seconds and I'll tell you exactly what it was.
Very fortunate that when he kept deployment, I don't think he really thought out his decision to take his table side. Just because the way the table was laid out, it's very, it favored going second.
Gotcha.
Because it was very defensible.
I will put his list in the chat here. It's called Experiment Deschat Company. But it has a Magariba Guard with a Rafik FTO, Motorized Bounty Hunter, Ghoulie Doctor, two Ghoulies, one of whom's a lieutenant, and Jaren Jaren McMurrow. And then he had two Kum, a Hulang, four Deployer Mind Layer, a Fanus, a Zensha, and a Corsair.
Sounds about right, yep. So I guess when I rolled up to that table, I definitely knew that I had to put my hideout in a high spot just so I can oppress the board as much as possible. That mid board is pretty open. So anytime I see a pretty open mid board, I really want to put my hideout as high as possible. I'm comfortable with him dying, or I guess gutsing prone if he needs to. I think when he deployed, he left the sides of his motorbikes out, just because they have such a wide base, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4 55 mil bases in this list. That's off on any table. That's hard to hide. Yeah. That's a lot of 55 mil bases.
Yeah. So I felt really bad when I started my first turn and I throw smoke down with a Varangian, and then the hideout just has a day right at the carnival, just shooting little targets all day.
Mm-hmm.
Here's
a question, and this is something that maybe Owen has an opinion on. When you dodge, it's a normal move, right? Can you exit your motorcycle?
Exiting start of a pilot's or start of a move skill?
Like, yeah, it's sort of, so it's a move. I don't know if it's a move. I think it's a move skill. I think it's a short move skill when you make a dodge or when you fall back. Like, could you get off the motorcycle and no longer be in line of fire?
Owen and I will do research. You guys can continue.
Yeah, I was just curious. I'm just, for anyone else in that situation, it just occurred to me that might be a play. You could just dismount.
Yeah, by performing any skill with the movement label.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a way to, because you can't shoot the motorcycles then. You just go by. Oh, no, you can shoot the motorcycles then, actually, but either way, you're not dead at least.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, sorry. So you just had a turkey shoot against all these guys through smoke.
Yeah, it was really unfortunate. It just kept going, unfortunately for him. I think I took out all but one Coom Rider, and I was able to open up the board in a way that the Carhu could go and take out the Maggie. And I don't know if there was anything he could do about the Maggie dying, because how quick the Carhu Harris fire team is, they can get across the board anywhere they want.
Yeah, because they climb plus, they can just stick to walls like Spider-Man.
Yeah. So in my first order, with the Carhu, he took out the took out Maggie in one shot.
Ooh, that's that's unlucky. That's you should take a wound. That's even with a burst. I guess with a burst four, she'll
burst.
Back.
Yeah, burst four, and he missed his shot. So three hit. I would.
You can, in fact, dodge out of it.
You can.
Yes.
Nice.
You'd have to declare the dismount before anything happens. So like, you go, you face up. He goes, I'm gonna dodge dismount, and then he gets out, places his guy next to it. You roll all the dice, and then he does his move if he gets it.
Gotcha.
Yep, but it's the requirement is when a trooper declares any skill with the movement label and announces that he will dismount, replace the figure with the motorcycle, place the figures, the trooper's model in silhouette contact, or measure movement from the token space as you prefer. And dodge has the movement label. And thus,
that's amazing.
You can just say, I dodge dismount. Now you have to declare it because it does require that you announce that you will dismount. So before anything, like they could shoot you and just miss, and you're like, damn, I wish I was still on my motorcycle. But if you're you're like, I'm gonna die here, then
yeah, just get off and then go prone or something like that.
Wait, so you can be immune to a shot if you jump off the motorcycle?
You're considered the whole thing during that order.
Okay.
But at the resolution step, you could get off as part of like your dodge. No, fault.
You actually get off immediately, but you're still considered part of it.
Oh, interesting. Oh, because you dismount, you declare the dismount at the start of the dodge, and then you resolve the dodge as if you've been dismounted the whole time.
Right, because you
super weird.
Place the model in silhouette contact with the motorcycle token, or measure his movement from the edge of the token space as you prefer.
What about guts movement?
Yep. Is failing a guts considered that? I guess I'll look that up.
It'll just say if it's like a move order fixed to 2 inches, then that's probably the answer.
That seems pretty strong, especially on high value motorcycles like the Knight of Montessa.
Yeah.
He's so good.
Oh yeah.
No, because sure guts doesn't have the movement tag.
Ah, there you go. So it would only if you declare a dodge, but you could just get off as part of the dodge. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And you'd be it states that you can measure from place the trooper's bottle in silhouette contact with the motorcycle, or measure its movement from the edge of the token space as you prefer. So I'm not sure if you'd place it immediately and then resolve the order, or
probably only if it's successful.
Or you would do the movement right off of the motorcycle. Because it seems to go either way. Because it allows you to do both of those things.
Interesting. Because it's almost never done reactively, which is what made me think about it. I'm just trying to think of how he could have saved those Kumra letters, right? Because like if you got off, and can you be prone too? Could you do both of those things at the start of that dodge?
If you successfully dodge.
Yeah. But then you could be prone behind your bike and be out of line of fire. Because the bike's taller than you are.
Yeah.
Just weird corner case things that come up when guys get punished for the giant turkey shoot with a huge smoke shoot in the first turn. Yeah. And I assume he duoed that Magri Bagard too, so he probably didn't put it on suppression. That might have slowed you down.
No, yeah. Yeah, I think the game would be different if he won first, though, for sure. I think he would have hammered me pretty hard.
That car who doesn't like McMurro. That car doesn't like him at all.
Oh, McMurro got to the car who Harris, and my whole left side of the board just died.
Died. Yeah, he doesn't know. He's like, that's a cute gun you have there. Too bad it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Too bad you don't like chain rifles.
Yeah, McMurro's kill count, I think, on that left side was 6 models on his own.
Wow.
Oof. Yeah, he did work.
Yeah, he punched you for that first turn.
Yeah. He hit me pretty hard. Luckily, the Tiger Soldier was able to switch control groups on the second round and bail me out by cutting everybody down in the back. So,
getting his order pool.
Yep. Luckily, all of my classifieds were very friendly to my list. So I was able to get all of 3 of those, which really helped my tiebreaker.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, your first, I mean, that was what, in the end, not to spoil the ending, but that was actually, those three objective points are what got you the game.
Yeah.
Literally, because it was 16-19, because that was first tiebreak, and everybody else had the same composition points. You had one, two, three.
As near as I can tell, you could roll off of your motorcycle.
Nice. You had three. You only had three specialists too. So getting specialist kills was pretty hard off your list. Whereas his had one, two, three.
Yeah, just three as well. Another reason active turn dodging has damaged the game.
Yeah. Sorry, four actually, because the Maggie counts as a specialist too, doesn't it? Because the pilot's paramedic.
No.
If you kill the pilot.
No.
Why wouldn't it?
Because they don't count. For the same reason that the Stigmata doesn't have a pilot.
Like, what if the pilot dismounted and got killed? It's a paramedic.
I don't believe the pilot skill allows that, because you lose the value of the other thing. I'd have to look it up. I mean, even if they did, he didn't. So, problem solved.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm just wondering if it counts for firefight, because firefights, lieutenants, specialists. More stuff in the panoplies, and what's the last one? I'm not thinking army points for your three, for your seven primaries. So I imagine that game was a pretty good first game. So it puts you into the, you had a major round one. You went in with your full 10.
Yep. No, sorry. I think I got 9 in that one.
Just skip out on panoplies. Too busy killing.
Yeah, we tied on panoplies.
Yeah,
pilots in a vehicle or a tag in an unconscious state are not considered survivors or casualties for victory points retreat or any other purposes.
Interesting.
Only the vehicle counts. So the paramedic of the Magariba Guard can get out, do as it will, but so long as the Magariba, like, the only thing that matters is the Magariba Guard.
Interesting. And it doesn't count as a special skill.
Because it says it does not count. It's not considered survivors or casualties for victory points, retreat, or any other purpose. So I would argue any other purpose would include that.
Yeah, for sure. Rule. Yeah, definitely.
So if your killer hacker jumps out you, of your, what was it, Dan? The Salamandra?
Yeah.
Salamandra?
Salamandra, that's right, yeah.
He can run around, killer hack all he wants, and then die and be not worth anything.
0-0, that makes sense.
Yeah.
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 It's all the tags right now. So then round two, we go into acquisition, and acquisition, of course, is, we played in, Winter War, the direct action version of that, which is Uplink Center. It's three objectives across the middle. You can activate the left and right consoles for one each, and then it's control at the end of the game for 5-3 from the middle, 1 for each of the other ones. And then I think it's classifieds after that.
When classified, HVT on.
HVT on, that's right.
Yeah.
Sweet. So what was, and this is the same list you took into that one. What was the plan there?
Right. So I lost first turn. My opponent was playing, I believe, Nala Aleph. I'm pretty sure it was. I'm much more familiar with Aleph than I was Dash at Company. So when he deployed, I think he had a Pravarti, a couple of Myrmidons, and some Netrods, and I think he had some mercenaries. I don't recall the names, but I knew just off the top of my head that almost half of his army was not deployed in two models. So when he told me he has Strategos 2 and he's withholding two models, I knew right away it was got to be one of the Achilles and a Marut, or some type of Hector and the Marut.
Yeah.
On that board specifically, it had complete rooftop openings. There was no cover on the rooftops. If you could see somebody, they could see all of you.
Right. If your head was above the level of the ceiling, yep, basically, yeah.
Yep. So I knew I had to challenge the board as much as possible, and try to drain as many orders as possible from his attack. So the high dial had to go up top. I knew something was going to get to that fire team, but I had to make it as painful as possible. So what I did was, I actually deployed my Bashi Bazook onto the board, having him hollow mask as Taiwu.
That's a good distraction.
Yeah, because Taiwu has CC -6 And the natural born warrior monofilament weapon. So if it's going to be Achilles, then at least he can scare him off.
That's fair. Yeah, you can break him away. So his list, by the way, was a Strategos Marut, Achilles version 2, 2 Krayt Gods, 2 Myrmidons, a Denivus Hacker with upgrade Oblivion, Parvati, 2 Netrods, the Corsair, and a Warcourse. He went with a strong one combat group face punch list.
Super duper strong. My butt was clenching the entire time. I was very nervous.
Yeah, your smoke doesn't do much against the Marut if it starts on suppression or comes after you.
So luckily the Hideout was able to win one of the face-to-face fights and put a wound onto the Marut, which is relevant later. But the Marut guns down the Hideout pretty quickly. He advanced on his left flank with Achilles, and from the lieutenant role, he knows that my lieutenant is one of the Fusiliers.
Knows your Whip 12, yeah.
Because it's Whip 12. He knows which one it is. And basically, I knew he was going to go for it. Either he goes for it and gets my lieutenant kill, or he doesn't and he pulls back and wastes a bunch of orders trying to secure Achilles into a better position. So I just had to make it as painful as possible for him to get to the back. I think I got really lucky in the very end because Achilles was able to get aligned to my lieutenant and put 4 shots into the Fusilier and missed all but one, and the Fusilier made his armor save.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Talk about TSN turning point. That guy's heart literally fell out of his body. Yeah. At that point. He felt his soul leave his body when he missed 3 of those shots.
Yeah. It was really unfortunate. I think, yeah, it just gets worse because he traded Achilles to do that because he ate another nanopulsar from Taiwu.
Right.
As he went to the back corner of the map. But I mean, that's a game winning move, right? If it's like high risk, high reward, if he gets it, I have no counterpunch.
Yeah, you're stuck. You're stuck for the whole next turn. You could blow your command tokens maybe to do something, but that's it.
Yeah, I really didn't have, I wouldn't have enough orders, or maybe I wouldn't have enough orders to get rid of the Marut. But yeah, the Marut only have taken one wound. Trading Achilles for basically the whole fire team. I think I can understand it from his perspective as well. I would definitely go for the throat there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, his list didn't have staying power either in a mission where you need to be on the table on turn 3, right? Yeah. He had 2 net rods that are fully immobile. He has 2 Myrmidons who may just buy at the templates at some point. He's got a hacker hiding. He's got Parvati who might come rescue either the Marut or Achilles. And he's got 2 Krakots. So, like, he's got all of his eggs in Achilles and the Marut. Like, there is only real, like stable, you know, I can stand behind cover, maybe suppressing and not die pieces.
Well, I think the real kicker was his deployment does not pass the Phoenix test. So you could see end to end on his deployment zone. So when he didn't kill my Fusilier and that was his last order, I was pretty comfortable I could cut the Marut's legs from underneath it. So I was able to parachute the Tiger Soldier across the back line there.
Somewhere safe, yeah.
The very edge of his deployment. I think that's a 16-inch deployment.
Yeah, it's a big deployment.
So there was an opening, and then the Tiger Soldier just went to work. He mowed down all the net rods, Parvati, and was in a pretty good position to have another follow-up turn 3. And I figured I was behind. In my mind, I felt I was behind because the Marut was still dominating the center area. And so I had one irregular order left from the Beast Hunter on the second group. And I said, okay, well, just take a shot at the Marut.
Panzerfaust? Yeah, maybe.
Panzerfaust. Yeah, so he walks around the corner, short skill move, short skill BS attack. He declared discover before my second sword skill. So the Beast Hunter just had a free shot.
Oh, buddy.
And I crit him, and he also lost the brute.
Oh man, yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
It was really really bad, unfortunate events for him.
Yeah, two swingy D20 moments in one game, and he was playing like a thick, like, you know, you need one of these two pieces at least to make it to round three kind of a list.
Yeah. That's how the game two kind of went. At the end, after that, was just kind of cleaning up the board, capturing objectives as much as I can.
Stand on the buttons, yeah.
Yep.
And what was your score like for that one?
I think it was 7-0.
So you're going in with another major because you got over five, and it was round three. And round three was a kicker of a mission. I put the kicker mission at the end this time round. I think it's going to be in the middle for Summer Siege because I put Unmasking in the middle, and Unmasking is another kicker mission because it's round scored. This is arguably one of the most low scoring missions in this ITS pack, which is Capture and Protect, which is it's the beacon mission. You got to get across the board, you deployment edge, grab it, you round score for two, you score at the end of the game if your opponent doesn't have yours for one, for seven, and there's some other bullshit in there, but it's basically you do not get to 10 unless you're holding the opponent's beacon on turn one.
Yeah.
And I have an unrelated rules thing to comment on because it came up in my games this week.
Sure.
Yeah.
Direct templates take effect for the entirety of an order once you've placed them. But what that means is in a normal situation, when you do a move and then a BS attack, you can fire at any point along your movement. If you move and fire a template, you can't allow that template along that movement to be in such a way that would affect you later in your movement.
Yeah, you can't cross your own shotgun blast.
Right. Oh. So like if you have like chain rifling McMurrow who's jumping forward, you can't put it at the beginning of his jump to affect more people with the wide end of it if it means that later throughout his move he will be hit by it himself.
Yeah, there's some weird corner cases where if he was going down, you could like angle it from the top of a jump down and then skirt underneath the pointy end.
It actually,
you can always shoot it sideways.
Basically impossible unless you were doing it off the top back of his silhouette, which also states you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be from the front of your, like the closest point of your silhouette. And so if you moved forward, you would touch it. So you'd have to like place the template, move down or backwards.
Move sideways and then down. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in order to dodge your own template. It came up because a linked group of people walked around a corner, and in doing so, a mine would be triggered by a guy who was between the mine and the guy walking around the corner. And the question was, does the mine go off? Because its attack is going to get canceled because of the friendly guy going in between. But does the mine go off prior to him going in between? The answer is, it doesn't seem to.
Interesting.
Yeah, the mine reveals, tries to shoot, goes, never mind, it goes back in the camo.
No, it doesn't go back.
Oh, it just goes revealed?
Yeah.
It goes away.
No, it doesn't go away either, because it was canceled. You never made an attack.
No, attack is canceled means it doesn't happen, because it's still triggered. It triggers if you go into the area of effect, and then the attack itself becomes canceled.
I don't think the mine actually goes, but we'll continue researching that as you talk about the next game.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, no problem. Where was I? So,
like, you're playing Matt round three. you're playing against another Windsor boy. You drive all the way from Windsor and play a guy from your city.
Yeah. So Matt and I are good friends. We've been basically wargaming sparring partners.
Oh, here's your answer. Forever. Mine never actually triggered because it would have affected an ally.
There you go.
Undo reality.
So look, the mine will neither detonate nor be revealed.
Yeah, because it never got triggered.
So you go back to camo.
Yeah. It was never triggered.
You never left camo.
Yeah. Right. But it's like, hey, I'm revealing. Let's Jesus put down a Christ. Template. I can't put down the template. Sweet. Never mind.
Have your own podcast where you talk about this. Let John talk. You two fucking degenerates. You're trying to drag this back into last week, and I won't let you. Go to your room, both of you. John, please carry on. Jesus Christ.
So when I decided to sign up for Spring Offensive, Matt was already kind of messing around with his double Oya Royalist. I don't know if you have access to that.
I sure do. I'm looking at it right now. I'll tell you exactly what it is in. This is an Owen list. Owen's gonna love this list
because it's a spicy list.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So it's, and what's cool about this list is it is almost like active turn, it's immune to hacking.
because they both have stealth. So it's two stealth tags that are only 75 points each. They're not as versatile as size seven tags can be because they only have AP heavy machine guns. They don't have multis, but they also have heavy flamethrowers and crazy koalas, which is very cool. They can leave behind, like they can walk up to where a hacker's on top of a building in the active turn, drop a crazy koala if they want, like inside, like outside of hacking range, but inside their own thing, and then walk in and be like, what are you going to do? Like, just go off and have an adventure. So it's two of these. He's got a Domer Lieutenant with a chain rifle, Oda FTO, and three Tankos to make a nice fat like core link, and then two Pangolins, one Hacker Evo, I'm assuming to give the Oyoroi's Fairy Dust, and then a Deactivator on Yojimbo to go Peace Trade, because Yojimbo is a incredible 20-point affordable Peace Trader. So yeah, this is a fucking crazy list. This is 10 orders of yeah, just kill you.
When you go first with that list, you just kill the world. It's amazing.
Can't wait for the new Oyoroi so I can play this list, because I have all of this stuff painted apart from that.
Yeah, the crazy thing with that list is when you have a problem piece, let's say like a hacker, you can deploy your crazy koala and then go up and just flame template them for free, because basically they're going to eat the crazy koala if they do anything really. Yeah. And the Oyoroi has got fairy dust, so trying to hack the Oyoroi is really kind of useless.
Hit him with that possession.
I tried.
I mean, he's got that sweet. He just dumps the. It's weird because it's almost like an up close version of the mind dispenser tag, except this guy's got just placed them inside. Like, there's no roll. You know what I mean? It's just like, what'd you do? I just put another qual down. and then you use either the Pangolin or the Pangolins to reload if you want to.
Yeah, it's a crazy effective list.
I thought you were gonna say he climbs out of the tag and then just stabs the hacker. Like stealth martial arts CC23. Most hackers are going down to that.
That's fair. Yeah. Even that.
So rolling up to that game, I fully expected to lose either the Harris or the core fire team. So I had to prepare myself in a way that if he takes one of those teams, I have a way to trade back with the Oyoroi. So I kind of set up my fire team core in the center to try and bait out one of the Oyorois to come in and basically trade for the fire team. I had Taiwu set up as a Nis with an HMG, to kind of look vulnerable at short range. I think one of the biggest things on that table that we played was he took the deployment on the side with the most cover, which I think was a trap because all that cover didn't cover his Oyoroi's. Didn't have the biggest buildings, even though it looked like the most easily defensible side.
And he had a lot of like peace trading stuff too. Like he had a Flamin Spear and a missile launcher on those Tankos that could easily have like overwatched and caused some consternation, because both those have templates and they're both scary and they're both in five main link teams.
Yep. So I had to do, when he deployed, he had put both Oyoroi's centralized behind the main line of fire blocking terrain. So it gave me an opportunity to jump in with the Tiger Soldier and do a little bit of cleaning on the side. I could trim a little bit. I had to get rid of his missile launcher. I think he's got a missile launcher in there.
Yeah, a Tanko missile launcher and a Tanko Flamin Spear, both the two overwatching templates he has.
Yeah, I had to make sure I got rid of them. So the Tiger Soldier goes in, cleans up a bit. I basically end up trading the Tiger Soldier to get that missile launcher out, and I think I almost nab his lieutenant. I can never tell which model is which in JSA. I just kind of kind of pick. I'm like, that one looks like it might be a lieutenant. All right,
he's got a weird hat and a sword. He's probably a lieutenant.
Yeah. So the Tiger connects. Then the Carhu follows up in the open space, and he almost kills an Oyoroi on his first turn. I set up more repeaters, and I moved my Fugazi up to threaten his Oyoroi's on his coming turn. Because Valeria has the 5-man link, so she gets 6 sense.
Right.
So I was very fortunate to have the gear check, or to pass the gear check for this,
yeah,
for this game.
Cancel his stealth, yeah.
Yeah, because if you don't have anything to deal with those Oyoroi's from that stealth, they're just going to walk right up to you.
Yeah, he needed to use Jim. If like Jimbo had survived the first turn, he needed to go and get that team down to 3 models just to purely allow the Oyoroi's to walk around.
Yeah, Jimbo ate the for your buck pretty very, very quickly.
I assumed. Yeah, he was the one thing that could run up and actually get that done.
Yeah. So on his first turn, he had a straight shot to my fire team, but he had to clear through 2 repeaters and Valeria. And I think because up to that point, his dice had not been complying. He was a little bit, I don't want to say he was tilted, but he was a little bit frazzled. So it's difficult for him to try to like go for it.
Yeah, he's super order starved too in this list, right? Because if he doesn't get his, like he's losing out on all his impetuous orders because he's linked with his tankos, yep. And Jimbo's dead. So that's 2 more orders gone already, right there. So he's probably just being conservative.
Yeah, I think I killed 2 models from the 5-man fire team he had, and your Jimbo. I put 2 wounds into the Oyoroi, so I think he was very concerned, I guess. So instead of trying to go for the throat, which he normally would, I think, he tried to play it safe. Because there was one line that I knew that he would take down the center, and I was expecting him to take that one line down the center, because I put Taiwu in a spot where he can dodge into him.
Right, try and time up.
Yeah, but I think he peeled off, and he moved both Oyoroi's to his right side center board. It put one in suppressive mode, which I think was actually a pretty good idea. He had them in a fairly commanding position, threatening the Carhu Harris team, but he just kind of ran out of gas on his first turn, so mm-hmm. he just passed it over to me.
It was definitely a list that wanted to go first. Going second is rough for this list, I think, just because it's a double tag list. It's all his eggs in that, right?
Yeah, and I'm kitted out for the double tags between John Hawkwood and the Carhu.
Well, so this is Valeria. Like, we should mention the fact that this is your other list. So yep. This is the list you took that has a K1 multi-marksman rifle, or a K1 marksman rifle,
yeah.
which is Hawkwood, who is an incredible tag hunting piece, which I think is another key feature of White Banner. Not White Banner, White Company, sorry, just to do that one more time. But the fact that he's got a K1 marksman rifle, he's min-3 with BS-13. He fights inside the bad range of most tags, right? He goes to the zero yep. range inside 16. He's got BS-16 with, a -3 back, so a -6 if he's in cover. That's an uphill battle, basically, for a tag, and he just ignores their armor completely. He's spendy as hell, but he's a great tag hunting piece. Yeah, if they get too close, he just goes in and fights with a mono.
Yep. Yeah. So during all of my practice games, all of my local opponents were bringing tags for capture and protect, and you know, doing some of that. I think you call it the Monday quarterbacking.
Monday morning quarterbacking. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you review the game.
Yeah.
We always tend to go, and I come to the conclusion that the tag is generally what people will use on this mission to go get those points if they really want to go be greedy for it.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, well, I need a list that punishes tags as much as possible, and has enough arrow to kind of like soak up their main attack. So that's how I came to this list. So mm-hmm. It's minor tweaks.
Yeah, I was gonna say the minor tweak is you've dropped. You still have your Hadao. You still have the that full like fire team. You still got the Carhu Beast Hunter, but basically the Spitfire Tiger Soldier becomes Hawkwood. And I think that's. Oh no, he's still there too. Sorry.
I still have him there.
It's who was in the list previous that was in that role.
Oh, the Mind Layer was in that group, and Taowu. Taowu and the Mind Layer turn into Hawkwood. The Mind Layer goes to a different group. Yeah. It looks like you drop the other Beast Hunter.
Yeah,
so you drop, yeah, you drop Taowu and the second Beast Hunter.
Yeah, so the Bashi Bazook becomes Taowu.
Gotcha.
As the piece to dodge into him.
Yeah. Yeah, the disruption piece.
Yeah. It's a lot of like false information. So is Taowu Taowu? Sometimes Taowu is Taowu. It's kind of like a very meta. It's like very meta, like between players.
Use the Taowu move miniature to represent your Bashi Bazook all of a sudden, and you've got Taowu on the table, and everyone thinks you have Taowu, but it's actually a Bashi.
Yeah.
So you're one of those rare people that doesn't parachute their Bashi sometimes.
No, because I have the Tiger Soldier, so a lot of people are expecting the Bashi, but they're not expecting that Spitfire Range Band.
Hmm. Interesting. But they see Taowu on the table, who isn't actually Taowu, and they decide not to then strip your commander or your order pool. That's really clever, actually. That's a good mind game. I like that. That's some 3D chess right there.
Yeah, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. If you come across a player that knows how to count SWC and all that stuff,
or just knows that you would never reveal Taowu.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, "Do you know that Taowu doesn't have to be Taowu, right?" And I said, yeah, well, I don't know if I have to tell you that. So it's kind of like mind.
You're
games.
Aware of that. That's a thing you're aware of.
Yeah. So.
I like that. I like that. That's some Star Trek chess right there. So you go into this first turn. He has a real like uphill battle going to first turn, and he kind of stalls out, suppressing on the right hand flank with these two tags. Then what happens?
I think his dice in that last game just, and that second round, especially that second round, just disappeared.
I did walk by at one point, and he was like, "You just don't feel saves. You're just thinking about your saves." Like he wasn't tilted, but he was definitely like, "Well, it'd be great if you felt a save at some point."
Yeah. He had an Oyaroi within range of heavy flaming the Karhu, and the Karhu had no business making this armor save.
Damage 15 heavy flare with no cover.
Yeah, I knew I had to put one of the Oyaroi's down while I had the chance. So I stand up the Karhu, and he puts two shots into each Oyaroi. His suppressive Oyaroi misses both shot or all three of his shots, and he eats two Karhu shots. And he loses that.
Yeah.
My Karhu makes his heavy flamethrower armor save, and his other Oyaroi has to take two Karhu Fuya Bok shots.
Oh man, so it's like two orders, two dead Oyaroi. Yeah. Couldn't be more efficient than that.
Yeah, it just kept going. So in the very last turn, I think he just kind of admits defeat, but he positions all of his models to defend his beacon, and then Johnny has to go out and go claim the objective.
Right.
Yep.
By himself.
Yep. That's it.
You ended up, you've scored in the final round though. So you actually didn't get over five. And that was a really common occurrence across the whole tournament. Nobody scored a major in the final round. And so you guys, the top three players, it was you, Scott Finley, and Kyle all went in with major, major, minor. And so it came down to your objective points. And that was the biggest swing, was those three extra objective points you got, where you got all three of your classifieds in game one. Actually won you the tournament.
You ended up
19-16 for the first tie break.
When I was spitballing with Matt, we recognized that it was going to be three rounds, which means we had to go to the first tiebreaker. So immediately in the day, I knew, okay, I have to win every game except the capture and protect as hard as possible. And then whatever happens in capture and protect is whatever happens. And then just pray that we get the tiebreaker.
Yeah, because you're shooting for 30 objective points, but as close as 20 as you can go into the third round is probably your best thing. Yeah. In three round events, that's always going to be true, no matter how big they are.
Yeah.
And that was how it went.
Unfortunately, we got matched up, and my list was just prepared to take on a list like his.
Definitely. And there was a few, I mean, there was a few lists leaning real heavy into tags right now. Like we saw the Rafiq double, or the Rafiq with Maggie. We saw like lots of Salamandras, lots and lots of Achilles paired up with somebody. Achilles high five and Marut, or Achilles with an Agamemnon. There's lots of Sphinxes hanging out. I think in round, the final round, actually, Jordan, one of my constant opponents, played against Kyle. And they're both playing Shazvasti. And it was just like, it was a Sphinx off. It was going to be a Sphinx off in the final round. So it's interesting. And we've talked about this in the podcast before. Owen showed up in Calgary and there was no tags. But we've got tags aplenty. Like the tags, the tags never left Ontario at all. There are plenty of tags getting played with. And Owen brought all the tags last week or 2 weekends ago. He brought, how many tags did you bring? How many tags did you put in your suitcase? It was a lot.
Like four. Three or four.
One of the armies had three size seven tags in it. It was slick. Yes,
I did play the triple tag when I played at that other event.
Trip hammer. Or no, it was trip hammer double anaconda.
That was a day.
That was a fucking day. That's what that was.
Total immune trip size hammer. Seven. Here we go.
Total immune trip hammer. Min minus six trip hammer. Just disposable heroes, all three of them. But
anaconda's not having pilot.
That's so weird. That's such a weird ruling.
If not for that, I would have been cheating when I won those games.
Yep.
But I was incidentally not cheating because I
but didn't not know the but not in a way that you knew. The best part was you were not cheating by accident. That's the fucking weirdest interaction ever. There's like a
triple mess up there.
Yeah. It is a cheatception. So at the end of the event, you won on first tiebreak. You got 19-16. Scott and Kyle both went to third tiebreak, actually, where Scott had managed to. I mean, Shazvasi don't do a great job of conserving their soldiers' lives when it comes down to taking a punch. So I made a little more sense that Scott's VP total for the event was a bit higher. And that was it. So that was the third round. And you walked off with a Bishi, which was pretty cool. You get the event pack.
Yeah.
And some other swag. And yeah, let's hear your thoughts then about this mix and match thing, because that's what I want to lead into is what is it about these N2A factions you think that is leading them to be more popular in tournaments and to show up at, like, they're podiuming a whole bunch right now. Like, you saw, you played against Deschat, which was interesting. Mm-hmm. We've seen I think it was Foreign Company won Adepticon. And there was some other major tournament recently I saw where I think it was Starco won. I can't remember which one it was, but I remember reading about it just recently where Starco won like a major event too. So what was it about this like mix and matching of multiple factions that you found attractive?
Well, I know White Company has a lot of mod game. And I think that's if you don't have the... If you don't have the right gear, it's kind of like a gear checklist. If you don't have MSV to deal with their mods and the smoke, then you're really just going to fall behind. Mm-hmm. And so it's similar to having really heavy tags. If you don't have something to deal with a tag, tags and cover just don't die, right? It's kind of one of those gear checklists where you can kind of also pilot to a very strong victory. And if you don't have something to contest that hideout, the hideout just presses the board. If you don't have something to deal with, to trade with the Karhu just hunts everybody down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have some really, like, one of the things I'm noticing about all of these lists is they have some really interesting pieces that all float in, like, the 20 to 35 point range. A lot of them don't have like a bunch of inherent weaknesses. Like they're not heavy infantry or they're not hackable, like inherently. Yeah. And they all bring like a really solid mix of gear that you don't tend to get in other factions. Like you said, like the fact that you get MSV smoke, but you also get like pano ballistic skill.
Yep.
That's a real tasty combination.
It's pano is melee.
And the fact there's just melee in the list too. Right, like you have access to Tawu's melee. Hawkwood's actually not bad in melee. The Varangians are great in melee. It's Shona who's great in melee. Like, there's a lot of stuff that it just doesn't show up in other factions. It's like Bolts in Foreign Company, like Bolts with like all of this like linkable shenanigan. Yeah. where you can tie them together with like Hannibal or Bill, and they all count as bolts as well, right? And you know, you're building this really powerful fire team that you wouldn't normally see, where they all have marksmanship just for me, but you can also have Ascendant with them, or Massacre, or Valkyrie, or whatever. I think there's some real power there, but it feels like it's harder to parse, maybe. That's why they weren't initially super popular, but people are giving them a chance now.
I think it might just be the amount of repetitions, especially with how long N4 has been out. It does take some time to understand what the meta's settling for. So like you're always gonna kind of get those stronger ish factions. Like you're gonna see double bears from Ariadna, and you're gonna see the vanilla nomads kind of dominate with just having value pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think once you start exploring these NA2 armies and kind of really like, you have to put in the reps and the time to really solve them, because if you just kind of like look at it, you can't just go, okay, well, this is strong, this is strong, this is strong, but how does it all work together? It's not very clear at first glance, you really have to put in the reps. If you don't put in the reps, I don't think you can really discover what a sectorial or any army really can do.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Some, they're not all built the same though. Like, I'll be honest, Ikari companies, like there's nothing that stands out there. Like they just swapped the color of the remotes for the most part and gave you a Rishi. Like that's an Illudan. That's kind of all they did there. It's JSA with Woomings, and Druze and Scarface and Cordelia. And it's like, you're not exceptionally showing me something cool, right? The way that like white company is, or foreign company is, where you have these standout units that just don't really exist anywhere else. Or even Dashat. I think Dashat actually is another one where it's like, Dashat, I can make that argument, I think, where it's like this really interesting mix of Hak Islam and Yu Qing that like I think has like a big, there's a big like opportunity for things like Saito Togon to be hanging out with and on the same table as like a bunch of like MSV, right? Like real serious fighter MSV, or to have like the Alpha Z be able to get like backing up JSA pieces.
I think part of it is when you do play in NA2, what makes an army or sectorial, I guess, in general more viable is not only having one blade pattern. So White Company actually has access to Orc Jujak links, and you can end up actually making a very decent like 6 HI list.
Yeah, the Jujaks are pretty affordable compared to the Orcs. So you get a decent like and they bring some extra gear too, like they bring that sweet -6 -6 firewall. Oof.
And they corner guard very well, 2 wounds, heavy flamethrowers, right?
Yeah, the flamethrowers. The fact they're all stacked with templates too, yeah.
Yep.
Which is nice. And breakers, which can be very, very cool. Yep. Because they're like affordable K1.
Yeah, so I think not being locked into a single play pattern helps an army significantly. Because if you, for example, like in the second game, as soon as I saw Vanilla Aleph and I saw Strategos 2, I was like, okay, I know exactly what is coming at me.
Yeah, yeah. It all telegraphs. That is the thing with Aleph, is they don't, there's not a lot of ways to build the army successfully. Like there's a lot of like, oh, these are the kind of obvious combos, and it's just what combination of those sort of like stacked components do you take?
Yeah. I wanted to experiment a bit more with more midboard Noken and the Gwilings, but it wasn't, the list was becoming too brittle to templates. So I might revisit that later if they have a little bit more love.
Do you feel like there's an element with the N2A stuff of chaos too, where your opponent doesn't really know what to expect because it's such weird misses?
Oh,
like,
absolutely. Oh,
yeah. How do you think that? Argument. Sorry, go on, Dan.
That was going to be my argument, is that it's kind of like nobody plays them as much. So playing against them, you don't know what to expect.
Yeah, the Toha.
And effect. So during the battle, you're trying to figure out what the enemy army is doing instead of playing the game fully. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like your brain is distracted instead of being focused on the win.
Yeah, you hyperfix it in that Carhu, and then all of a sudden the Tiger Soldier shows up and starts blasting you like he's fucking Van Zandt. You're like, what is happening?
Yeah, that's a pretty good point, Dan, because some people are just kind of trying to figure out what's on the board. Okay, this hideout's in a 5-man link, so it's gonna have burst 2 and arrow, MSV 2. And that Carhu, I gotta fear that Carhu over there, and there's a Beast Hunter over here. But then the Tiger Soldier sneaks in and he's like, he has access to a Tiger Soldier? With a Spitfire? What the heck?
Yeah, it's a bit like shocking, just the variation, and it's just showing up all of a sudden.
Yeah. So that's a really good point. And maybe that's what it is. Not really maybe you're just kind of so uncomfortable and off on the back foot that mentally you don't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone's very settled on like what a hyperpower faction can do, but when you start mixing those things together, it does get real weird real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that Carhu, and I think we said that earlier in earlier podcasts, we were starting talking about things like the Beast Hunters, like miniatures that are very popular with no models, where people are just like, what's a Beast Hunter? And you're like, you're going to meet this guy a lot. He's gonna wear many faces and all of them are going to make you sad for 9 points. When I tell you how many points I spent on this guy and what he can do.
Yeah.
He has what?
I think the craziest thing is the options of coordinate orders that you can do with the Beast Hunters as well. So I like having throwaway troops that you can just coordinate order with and BS attack.
Because so it man makes, who's played with Daylamis.
Yeah. Because it's really easy to just trade pieces away. They're like, okay, I didn't lose a regular order. And I may have lost 1 9-point model. It's really a lose-lose situation for your opponent.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's clearly your experience playing Akazlam showing there too, right? Yeah. Where it's like, wow, what is it you say, Owen? Their brief dynamic lives will be in service of victory.
Just brief and exciting.
That's right. Have you tried spending four Panzerfaust after them? Because four Panzerfaust work real good.
Yeah, this conversation just makes me think of just play Akazlam.
I was basically trying to
do my best impression.
Look at all these cool things that my faction can bring, and it has like multiple ways of playing, and like it's got high BS and smoke and throw. It's like yeah, it's Akazlam.
NA2 is just Akazlam ordered from Wish. Is that what you're saying?
NA2, if you took all the NA2s kit and combined them together, you'd just have Hakazlam.
Yeah.
They'd have the take out the Hakazlam pieces of NA2, and then yes, I think you're right. You'd have the mesh of that middle of the road, but you have a million
half
options.
Of them are already just Hakazlam lists.
Yeah.
Because they're like Deshad are you? Is, yeah, I'm sure. QK. I'm sorry. and Deshad is also
slightly better DK
Hakazlam again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the Ikari company is sadly Hakazlam, but not great. Yep. It's not very good.
Hakazlam, but we're going to take away the best part of the base troopers of Hakazlam.
Yeah, Hakazlam.
I think Ikari company is
Alpha Zids. That's it. It's Alpha Zids and Bashies. That's literally all they get. They get Alpha Zids and Bashies. It's like, why?
Yeah, at last I can bring Kosetsu as my line infantry. That's the one that everyone's been fighting for.
Yeah. Well, the thing
Dual is, Dualams are for losers.
The Ikari company is literally all the dishonored people, right? So it's like the Wu Ming, the Tankos, the Yan Yans, they're all pirates, the ninjas, the brawlers.
Oh, you like pirates? I got a whole pirate faction for you.
Just saying. It's playing too much into its theme, and therefore it doesn't do anything particularly well. It's like it was made with space piracy in mind and not necessarily with gameplay in mind.
And this is where I went. This is like there is a space pirate faction. It already existed. Why did you make
Call
a second?
QK. Right? Right. Like it's the original space pirates. Yeah. You're right or wrong. Yeah.
It's weird that QK doesn't have two Harrises. We were talking about it this weekend.
Wasn't that their thing originally that they brought in Harris?
They were the OG Harris.
That's right.
They're the one that doesn't get it.
It'd be too
strange
good
to me.
Can't have two Azrael Harrises and also a core. It's too powerful. Can't do it.
I'm okay with it.
I mean, I know you are.
It would make it so that they could at least try and compete with the other two or the other one. I don't know if Task Force actually competes, but.
Oh, have a fight about that. I'm sure John has an opinion about that.
Oh.
You know, the Rama can compete?
Task Force versus Assassins.
Go.
Probably going to have to be Assassins.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Isn't the versatility? Like, what's your argument there? Okay, but Owen, you have to. It's like your fucking hyperbole that comes out of you, man. Jesus Christ. They're just better. Like, you're the
built
least
different.
You're the least podcaster of all time. We're going to start all our podcasts in three. Yeah. Your TED Talk is built only four tough. Words. So
make
why?
Your dreams come true.
Let
just
John
do
say,
it.
So, John, why? What is the argument between the two?
I think Hassassin just has more decision points that it forces upon your opponent, so it's easier for your opponent to lose the game. Whereas Rama Task Force is what you see is what you get. Like, you have what kind of tricks do you have?
You got a Sunduk Butt.
Sunduk Butt.
Toreg.
That's it.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, that's it. So I feel like Rama Task Force is really
you could
easy
do
to
a little
up.
Bit of fun stuff if you wanted to get into the Nahabs and Mukhtars.
Yeah.
But like, dropships are pricey.
Yep.
And Assassins are like, I could do that, but for 5 points.
I think the problem Roma has actually isn't competing against Assassins and QK. I think it's competing against Vanilla. There isn't really a trick they pull that Vanilla can't just do better, right? By having a more varied access to things like Assassins and, you know, like those are like more tricksy pieces that allow you that versatility. Like,
well,
they're big armored piece you can still do
that's
in Vanilla.
Because like the raw stats that you could pull out of Task Force are higher than anything that they can do in the other factions.
Yeah, mechanical advantage wise for sure.
But like, that's all they got.
And yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's not the strength of your faction. Like let Pano get its 5-man link of BS 14 and 15, because you're not gonna beat him. Why not just don't play and go, this is a Ghazi.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is you can still take chunks of that in Vanilla, but then also have access to things like Fidays and, you know what I mean, like that other stuff that makes up for it, right? Like, you can still have a Sonic Butt in Vanilla, and you can also still have like a duoed Maggie with a Rafik, which is mechanically powerful. So it's I think it competes against like that versatility, whereas the Assassins do the Assassin thing really, really well, and it's maybe worth dropping that other stuff to be able to do it.
Like, listening to your conversation, how your games went through and playing White Company, and like the learning that you had to go through to like figure out what makes White Company tick, it reinforces in my mind just like it. I wouldn't say anything in Infinity is like I've seen people try and do tier lists of the facts, like the factions.
Mm-hmm.
If I was gonna make a tier list, I think Assassin Baram sits above everybody.
Oh, that's a spicy take. Why do you say that?
I think there's lots. Yeah, you need to defend that spicy take, buddy. Because like, they have bad pairings. They got lots of bad pairings.
What? Name one.
Toha.
Why is Toha a bad pairing for them?
Because Toha can zap the brains off
for any reason.
Guys. They can mirror ball all their MSVs. There's like a lot of like. They also have impersonators. Like, there's a lot of like. Things that they struggle into. Same with
Toha does that to everybody.
Yeah, but if you're saying it puts it above them all, like if
yeah,
we're
well,
tier
here's
here,
the thing
you have
is
to
like,
be able to say that they don't have any bad pairings, right? If an S tier thing is S tier, it's because it doesn't pair down against anything.
I don't think it pairs down against Toha.
You can think like, that. I don't think you're right.
Like, what's Toha's answer to the Asawira and a Sunduk Butt?
We're in a Sunduk Butt, like
those two guys can be in the same team and link, or like in the same list. One of them is linked, and the other one is two people. And your Toha guy goes, "I put down a mirror ball, or I walk up and I can't."
They end game the Asawira and just kill him from a lot of fire. Like, there's a bunch of things you can do.
Your damage 13 attack against his BTS 9. And you gotta kill him 3 times. You're gonna spend 15 orders trying to kill that guy.
Yeah, maybe. Like, it's not necessarily 15 orders. It's because you can create and you can do all kinds of other things too. I'm just saying, like, there's ways of dealing with that guy. You got K1 in the army, like, you've got McCalls that can just walk over and eclipse onto him and then fight him nail
this. This is where, like, I go, like, I wouldn't try and do this for, like, because I wouldn't do it in Infinity. But my thing is, like, every other faction that has, like, the cool shtick, there's an answer to it in a sub faction of Hakazon. And that the sub faction also opens up the AVAs on a whole bunch of things that are really obnoxious for other factions to deal with. That would be the reason why I would do it, because they have access to all of the, like, you've been talking about gear checks of, like, things that you need in order to be successful in any game. They have all of them in a faction, with the exception of a really powerful base hacker, other than the Bereed, who is the anti their hacker.
Mm-hmm.
And that solves that problem in its own way.
So I think that Hakaslam is really powerful for one reason. They don't fail button pushes as often as everybody else. That'd be my spicy take. That'd be the only thing I would say that puts them in. If there's a tier list, they just don't fail button pushes. Like, that's literally the only thing in Infinity that I think. It's all about order efficiency for me. I think the game's too broad, and we share too much common DNA between all the factions, just, like, equipment wise and mechanically, that I just don't see it. You're entitled to your opinion, and I'm not gonna try and argue with you, because I know I can't, because
you immediately did. Your reflex was to try.
Of course it was. You bring that out in me. You bring out all my worst qualities. You're the neg of me. So of course I did. But if I was going to agree with you on that, it would be that the slight advantage they have is that they simply don't waste orders pushing buttons as often as everybody else does, because their basic whip is 14. They have a 10% the 10% bonus to whip.
For me, the reason would be is they have every single one of the things that are obnoxious that other factions have all blended into one. Like, all the things that you hate fighting, like, oh, I don't like fighting bears, I don't like fighting total immune dogs, I have one of those. Impersonation's really obnoxious. Yeah, what if we had that too? Disposable chain troopers, infiltrating camo, like, throwaway pieces, melee, shooting, like, they have access to all of the things.
Cool.
And I that would be my case.
And sure. I think that ties back into the no singular play pattern.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
When you roll up to the table,
definitely,
your opponent doesn't know what's coming.
Literally
at them.
So, anything could come out of this box.
Yeah. So there's so many more decision points, right? So, okay, so how do I deploy, if they're playing a sectorial, how do I deploy my fire team core? Or how do I deploy my Harris, right? Do I split them up? Do I put them together? It could be anything, right?
Because,
mm-hmm,
like, yeah. I look at your white company lists, and, like, there's obviously some, like, out of left fields, like the fact that you have that the dropshippers.
Mm-hmm.
What is he called?
The
Tiger Soldier. Like, that is something that you're not going to see coming until you've played it. Then you're going to have an idea that exists there.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's a lot of, like, on the table, here we go. I got smoke, I got stats, I got HMGs, I got a giant cannon fear block. These are my pieces that you have to deal with. And, like, looking through White Company, I don't see too many more other than what you've already kind of collected up here. Like, Tawu's playing games.
What other options there would be? He's pulled all the toys out of the box, what you're saying. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Or at least that I see on the surface level. I haven't dug deep into it, but
I think that, like, Orc Fire Team's got some legs. That Orc Jujak Fire Team can also do a giant Fear Block, and there's a few other like toys in there that he hasn't pulled out.
I guess I just look at that as like a variant of what he's already done.
Yeah, they're very similar. It's going to be, like, either a Prissy with high BS or Prissy with mimetism and decent speed and decent enough BS with a big gun. Yeah.
But I it's like you had said with the different points, like, you're going to play against White Company and you're going to see, like, it's still like a I'm going to fight you group of people that are in front of you. And you can't go too far away from that before you're like, why am I playing this faction? Like, I should just fall into whatever the other one is. and that
I think that's okay. I think that's okay though. I think that that serves the purpose that N2A armies have. They're not forever armies. They're like after they're kind of like after you've collected like a faction, here's a diversion, you know what I mean, to go and play. Like we use the Blood Bowl analogy a bunch of times previously, where it's like these are like the tier two, tier three teams where you play something different and like it kind of like remixes the game for you. I feel like that's serving its purpose. It doesn't need to have infinite variety and infinite replayability when it's an N2A faction. If it just provides like a different experience.
What we're talking about though is I'm going to play against you, right? What am I worried about coming out of your list? And how many potential worries do I have in your faction? Like that's the decision points that he's talking about and that I'm trying to like match. Like
for sure, yeah.
You can have this cow, like this Carhu Link, you can have the Tiger Soldier, you can have Tao Wu. Okay, so I've got Drop Trooper, Big Link, Impersonation Guy, or not Impersonation, like Hollow Mask, could be anybody. Bigger Link, more Drop Troop. It's like, all right, that's kind of where it peters off. Like there isn't much more threats other than like you could kind of do a hacking game if you wanted to try and make the bot work, like the missile bot work, because like you said, you started as a missile list and I think there's something cool there, but like everybody has a variant of that, so you kind of that's the basic. And then my point about the Baram was like could be anything coming out of that bucket.
Yep.
You could fight some horrifying five-man team, there could be no Link. You never know.
Yeah, so like I guess if I were to boil it down a little bit more, it's like what makes White Company powerful is its mod game and it's a bit of a gear check list in its own.
Yeah.
And if you fail that gear check, do you have MSV to challenge the High Dao? Can you cover all of your flanks as well to challenge the Tiger Soldier? Do you have something that can withstand a Carhu, you know, skittering across the map and hunting everything down with AP double action burst four.
Mm-hmm. The giant Fearbuck on climbing plus with mimetism and MSV is a terrifying.
It's bananas. It's bananas. It does all the jobs.
Yeah.
It does all the jobs. And also is linkable with like a disposable peace trader who can fight in melee. And then a guy to give him a back rub when he gets hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he does suffer the bad, the one wound, one armor, no shock immune. So like one bad roll for that poor guy and he's, or just a mine he didn't expect.
Yep.
And you're literally never getting a composition bonus in this if you're mixing models. There's no tags. It's just, did I take five Fusiliers? Then I have a core. Did I take five Kaplans? Then I have a core. Did I take five Orcs? Then I have a core. There's no other way of taking a core composition bonus in the list, period.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like I think that's actually though, that's a staple of the NA2s.
Yeah. Right?
With only a JSA kind of getting into the core game. And even them, they vary. Like I don't know. I've never seen it. I've never played a JSA person who brought, other than me bringing a core of Kaisetsu because I
do.
To fill the other group.
I always took a Kaisetsu core. I always took a pure core with them. Took it with the whatchamacallit, the multi-marksman, Kempete. I had the Kempete, I had the full core, and then maybe the doctor that doesn't break the bonus.
I get Yuriko, Kempete, and Kaisetsu.
Yeah,
but like that's what I mean though, is JSA is the one who might do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, yeah.
Like, which spiral core group? That's probably none of them.
No, they don't, but they take unlimited Harrises anyway, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but they can get a core.
Yeah, they can.
But they cannot get a pure core. Oh, sorry, they could
get a brawler core.
That's right.
Yeah, because the tiger counts the brawler.
The Druze could do it.
Get a good core.
The Druze could do it. That's
quote unquote.
They have Druze powers.
But like, I guess that's a great launcher.
You can bring in two diggers as Druze.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you could pad it out with diggers. I forgot about that. Man, that box of mining shit can't come out fast enough. I want all the trip hammer tags and I want some cool ass diggers because you literally get a box of five trip hammers and five diggers with
Starko, Gadu, Aguasil, Mobile Regatta, or Riot Girl. But like, I don't know, maybe. I guess that's just my experience with the NA2 guys is that you don't go all the way. You don't get that. Like
no, you're trading it for variety. You're trading it for like weird variety. That's their shtick. Yeah.
Oh, did you want a five-man core benefit? But why aren't you just playing that faction? Like,
yeah.
Because you're here because it's got something that you can't get elsewhere.
And I think that was what the foreign company, or no, that foreign company list that One Adepticon did, right? It had a like a very cool like Bolt 5-man core led by Valkyrie. So it was 4 Bolts and Valkyrie, and that's a powerful core that all of a sudden is a fighting piece and can advance and do all kinds of weird jobs. And it still has Beast Hunters, still has Kaplans, right? Can still take Wild Bill if you want to go and hunt stuff down. It was a neat, weird list. And they have a lot of weird, like, actual availabilities. Like, they can take Daktaris, so their doctors don't have shit whip. They can take Massacre and Uberfall Commandos. So, like, why not have a unit of, like, Chimeras and a Pupnik in your list with Bolts? It's an Kreeza Borax for your big heavy hitting Harris. There's a bunch of like different, I think, different variations on this White Banner sort of like style of play where it's mixing and matching a lot of cool pieces, and the lists are doing well, which is cool. It's cool to see things that aren't sort of like the traditionally well thought of lists dark horsing big events.
Do you think that's people being unfamiliar with what these NE2 armies do?
I think that's got to be part of it, because it certain isn't like what's here's the thing that's interesting to me is that there's a bunch of like inherent advantages missing from these lists. Like, you didn't have Tackware everywhere. You know what I mean? You didn't have NCO everywhere. Like, a lot of people are gravitating towards these like multi-order, super efficient lists. And you went for equipment advantage, some mechanical power, and variety. And I think there's, anytime you get something that upsets what kind of the meta is moving towards, which is this like, I would say like exponentially too high order count, which is slowing games down. And also
I think it's not order count. I think it's ability bloat. I think that there's way too much crap on individual guys. We were talking about that, about like the craziest things in like N2 and early N3 were like, wait a second, he has mimetism and MSV. And now it's like, let me list you the other side of the coin when you get to the Nahab, and you're
to
like,
push back on you though. Remember, they've unnested all the rules, so it's not actually ability bolt, because if you just had camouflage as your only skill in N3, you actually had like 6 other skills because it was just nested inside that one skill.
Right.
Right.
Find me any model that had martial arts, berserk, dodge bonus, natural born warrior, shock immune, crit immune, stealth, no wound incap, terrain total, frenzy, infiltrate, killer, hacker, parachute, a special op, armed with 4 different guns. That's a model in the current game. Like,
right. Okay. You're not wrong.
So like, that's, and I see it every time a new thing comes out. Like the Kaoru is such an interesting example of it, where it's like, there's like an extra rule here. I don't know which one it is, but it's one of them. And it's like the Sunduck Butt is the same way.
Definitely a criminal of that.
There's one extra skill that was added in here that shouldn't be here. Like, you take one thing off the Kaoru and he's still solid, but he's not this like this is a killing machine against most people. Like,
there's nothing you can't do. Like, why do you also have a Blitzen? Why do you have mines? Like, what? What?
Like, what gave them? Why do they have generic NCO?
Yeah,
built or NCO. Climbing plus for that matter. Or if
they're mountain men, why are they 6-2
instead of 4-2?
They're built different, Owen. That's why.
I'm okay with them different. Being good, but it's like this is what I'm trying to make the case for, of like, I don't think it's extra orders. I think it's some orders are becoming way better because they're like a hot pocket of special skills.
And so interestingly, they don't.
Right. You're going to cut me off. You might as well finish.
No. I was trying to start before you started your new sentence. They don't have NCO in White Company. I was just going to mention they lose that in White Company. So there are times they don't have that skill. Like, if they have it in Pano.
White Company, Kaoru, NCO.
Do they?
Yep.
Really? I thought they lost it in when they left their parent faction.
No, you just get it still.
See? There you go. Didn't think that.
Like, that would be my, and then like, does the Fjordbok need +1 burst? Maybe. Fearbox are cool, and I
Fearbox like they do need plus one burst just to be functional. No one took Fearbox before they started putting the plus one burst into them. They should just be burst three. Like they should just be more expensive or
should
worth
be,
more.
Should they be 3-1 though, or 3-2? Because the thing is you have to remember that it gets that AP explosive for that explosive version.
So you can do they can do 3 burst explosive if they want, which is hilarious.
Yeah, or 4 AP plus DA.
Sure can. Look, the point I'm making is you don't have access to TAC Aware. Like it's like with the military orders having kind of a dated build list compared to some other factions where there's literally no TAC Aware outside the tag in the faction, right? Like there's I would say what's interesting is to me about that N2A thing is it's doing well, and so there has to be a reason outside of order efficiency and outside of mechanical power. And just that gear stuff. And I think we're talking about the fact that they're a wild card, they're unpredictable. I think
the answer is he played well and thought through his list very well.
Yeah, absolutely. But also his opponents. No, but it's becoming a trend is what we're talking about. Not just his games. We're talking about it's popping up right now a whole bunch. And why is that trend occurring? And I think that part of that trend is because people aren't expecting to face that. So they've memorized play patterns and combos for kind of the net listing stuff that's out there, but people talking about these common, you know, like we talk about them here in the podcast, like missile lists and hacking net lists and double tags or tag Harris's or stuff like that. Like those are all common themes. And he took a list that 180'd from that and did something very different. And so people weren't prepared for it. And I think that the N2A armies do that particularly well because they tend to have these like mix and match patterns of interesting and different sort of variety where people don't, they're just not expecting it because it's off meta.
I think for most armies, I would be able to say, okay, you're playing Nomads, here's what I can expect. You're playing Ariadna, this is what I can expect. And I can do that for most of the major factions and most of their sectorials. But once you get to the NAs, I'm like, I have no idea what to expect. Starco, no idea what was in Starco. When Greg rolled up to the first table with Dashat, I was no idea what to expect. I just flipped through army really quick. I'm like, okay, all right, let's go.
Conveniently, it's a lot of hack Islam, so at least I know what those pieces do.
Yeah. But I had no idea what it was going to put down on the table. Mm-hmm. So I just had to trust my list and play the table.
Yeah. I think that Oyu Roy list is a good example of that, too, that Matt brought, where it's like, This is not necessarily on meta. Right? Like,
yes.
This is a weird list, but holy crap, it does this? Like, that's a... If you're not prepared for that and it's coming to left field, you get a real, like... You like you said, you get a real mental drain trying to figure out what it can do while you're playing against it. And I think that's an advantage.
I think the Starco list revealing the T2 sniper Cataran is a surprise. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you did that. I think honestly, Owen, you make lists like that all the time, right? You make lists with gimmicks or weird skews because it has that off-putting, like, what do I do about this? Like, what is this? Like, what am I playing against? Double Sonic Bot did that.
Is right, though, about the, like, when you get told a subfaction, there's, like, what are the threats in that subfaction, right? Like, you're going to play Ariadna. They're playing Caledonian. Okay, 3 dogs, scary HMG team, less scary other HMG team. That's probably it. Maybe a few camel guys. Like, Nomads are going to have their hackers, and they're going to have their disposable smoke people. Combine gets a little broad depending on which one, but like, yeah, you face those NA2 teams and you just no one plays them. They don't know what the combos are,
let alone know what entries are in that thing. So if you say Dashat Company is Yujing and Hak Islam, what profiles are available to Dashat? Did you know off the top of your head? I have no idea.
You instantly start worrying that there's gonna be a Fidane or deployment zone. You're like, what?
And then and then the dozer walks out. Like,
what is this guy doing here? This guy came to the wrong party. Like, is he invited? The hell's happening?
I think there's something to be said for when you're building your lists, even if it's not the NA2 lists. If you just bring some off put stuff that maybe isn't like the 100% optimal one or whatever, but if it does its own thing and people aren't as experienced playing against it, I bet you could have a lot of success with things that you've maybe thought that you couldn't.
All I know is Dashat can get to 7 orders and 47 points.
Regular orders?
Yeah. I don't know what you're going to do with that information, because there's nothing to bring in this list, but you can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that I think that, like, I think that there is a trend of, you know, like, every sort of meta needs to get catfished a little bit by lists that push things away and break that concept that, oh, it's all been solved, this is how you play this. Infinity's pretty solve proof just by nature of running on d20s, the table typically being the biggest wild card for any list, right? When you roll up to the table and you see what it looks like, combine that by mission, and I think that has a bigger effect on the list you're playing than anything else. You might know the mission going in, but the table could drastically change the performance of what you brought and how it's going to work. And that first turn dice roll, Owen has many times wished he could go second when he chose to go first, and vice versa. You know what I mean? And so have I. Like, there's a bunch of games where I can clear as day when we talk about that Monday morning quarterbacking, go, ah, it was definitely not my list. It was definitely that I made this choice at this point, whether it's to go first or to spin orders in a different way. And I can see the path to a completely different game. So yeah, I think that mental advantage combined by there is always something in a list I think you can find that's interesting, unless it's the Ikari Company. I challenge someone to play Ikari Company and make it work, because I don't see what's there. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Wait, what's worse, Ikari or Drew's?
Ikari.
Oh.
Yeah. Do it, Dan. Race to the bottom. Win with Ikari. Prove me wrong.
You could just play Drew's and Ikari.
I do have most of the Drews.
So. There you go. I'm done. Nailed it. You got a Scarface and Cordelia, you can play Ikari Company, because I think it's the only thing in there that might do something. There's not a lot.
Oh, and I need your Scarface.
They have the smallest, weirdest...
Do your Scarface with the trip hammer and go with it.
They have the weirdest, small... Yeah, they're like fire teams list even. It's like tiny. It's weird. They can make a Krakow Renegades fire team though, which I think is hilarious. All by itself. So it is. We finished. We're done. We talked about lists. We talked about this N2A trend. We talked about Spring Offensive. I want to thank John for coming in and for everybody that showed up to Spring Offensive. It was super fun. And for Owen and Dan, mostly keeping quiet through this one. Good job, guys. Letting John talk.
Look, what I've learned is that in order to win, you just got to dice people.
Yeah. Just go first and smoke dice Greg into oblivion.
Yeah. Don't lose your lieutenant when you should. Yep. And then one shot tags, and then
absolutely,
and then you win.
And always play Greg in round one. Always play Zuzka's in round one, because it'll just make you relax and happy, because he's just such a happy go lucky guy. So good on you, Greg. You're putting smiles on people's faces. Well, thanks everybody. You can check us out on Facebook. You can rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch up to us on our Discord channel. And of course, I want to thank all of our Patreon supporters who make this possible and allow us to continue to talk shit about Infinity, run events, and generally continue trying to push forward Infinity in Southern Ontario. So big thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.